Mr. Lykos, good morning again.
Good morning again. All right, same parties here, different issue, though. In the last case, Judge Arterburn had entered an order on December 16th of 2016, terminating my client's in loco parentis status. A short 5 days later, Hannah, through her father, filed a petition to change the minor child's name. My client was never given notice. Basically, this case comes down to, under the name change statutes, does Peggy qualify as a non-custodial parent that should have got certified mail notice within 5 days filing a petition or not? Is there an easy answer? I don't think so, because as Judge Castle pointed out in the prior argument, it's kind of a confusing title that she was given under the Texas temporary. However, I have cited multiple provisions in that temporary order that I think, once again, when you compare it to the Nebraska Parenting Act, if you look aside from just the title she was given and the substance and responsibilities that she was given, for all practical purpose, she was a non-custodial parent.
And at the time that the name change petition was filed, what was her status?
Well, the order had been entered 5 days earlier saying it was terminated. The appeal time had not run. It was not final for those purposes. I subsequently filed an appeal on that. At the time that the hearing was held on the petition for name change, that appeal had already been filed. He was already notified that that had been filed.
Was there any request ever to supersede the order in the parent case?
There was no request for a supersedion.
Okay.
Somewhat troubling to me is both in the petition for the request for name change and at the hearing on that petition, nothing was mentioned that there was ever any relationship to any other party. It was Hannah's the biological parent. Father was done by artificial insemination. The father had already stipulated that he had no parental rights. I don't know that the court had all the facts in front of it at that time.
That's what the statute sort of requires the judge to stop and visit those issues, though, as notice.
And it was a very short hearing. Nobody showed up to object. I think he basically asked, has anybody filed an objection? No. Moved on, stamped the order.
So where's the error?
There was a proof of publication.
There was a proof of publication that, okay, you know, met the publication requirements for Odo County, Nebraska for 2 weeks. Well, Hannah was well aware Peggy's back down in Texas and is never going to see that and never have the chance to make any sort of objection. And I even, when I argued on the motion to vacate that order in front of Judge Smith, I pointed out, hey, you may have very well entered this name change order anyway. I just think under the circumstances of this case and the fact that she had so many responsibilities and duties under this order, she should have at least had the opportunity to make an objection. At the end of the day, if it didn't make a difference, that's fine. At least she had the opportunity to make her.
So was she heard at the motion to vacate? Was your client heard?
Was she heard? No, we just argued.
Well, I'm sorry. Were her interests or her arguments made at the motion?
They were made in the motion, and they were also argued at the time.
Okay.
So is there anything she would have presented to the court had she been given notice originally that she didn't have the opportunity to present on the motion to vacate?
Well, I believe the standard would have been different for how that hearing was conducted. Because one of the other assignments of error I allege is that the evidence produced at that hearing was insufficient to show that it was in the best interest of the child to change her last name. Because I think the only, out of the 10 factors under the case law, there were only two that were brought up. One that is that Wild is the only last name that that child's ever known. And at the time of the hearing, Hannah's last name is still Wild. And I, as I set forth in my brief, I think both those factors weigh against changing her.
At the time of when the name change was commenced, Does the record tell us what Peggy's last name was?
Does the record? Well, there's no pleadings from her until after that order was entered. And well, I suppose in the record you can see from the temporary order in the Texas case. It was Hannah Wild, it was Peggy Wild. So, and then when I filed the motion, I was still Wild at that point.
Which ruling is before us, and which or both, the name change and or the motion to vacate?
Definitely the motion to vacate is before you.
And in terms of being timely.
Well, and I note that was raised in their brief, and I'll give you an explanation for that. Had I filed an appeal of the order changing the name, there was no evidence in the record for me to argue a position. I thought the only way I could get, I thought my client needed evidence in front of the judge for him to make a ruling. Otherwise, I don't think that appeal would have gone.
And did that occur at the hearing on the motion to vacate?
Yes.
Or argument, if not evidence?
Well, there's argument. I also offered three exhibits into there. There's a temporary order. There's Judge Arterburn's opinion.
So with respect to your motion to vacate, specifically which, if any, of the statutory bases for vacating an order were you relying on? Are you saying there was some fraud? Are you saying there was a mistake? Are you saying that the proceedings were erroneous? What was the ground on which you were asking the trial court to vacate its name change judgment?
Well, I would say that it was an erroneous proceeding because somebody that we're claiming should have had notice didn't receive it.
Was that jurisdictional in nature?
Is it jurisdictional in nature? I think the district court had jurisdiction to hear that. But I also think she should have had the right to bring it up as she did in her motion to vacate. Perhaps I don't understand.
Well, would the, if the statute as it now requires notice to be given to a non-custodial parent. Let's assume for a moment that we're in a different case where it's the more traditional. You have a non-custodial parent who didn't get notice. Is the failure to give that notice jurisdictional to the name change?
I think you can argue that. If it's required that this person receive notice and they don't get it, I don't know that the court has subject matter jurisdiction. If all the requirements have not been met.
So from your standpoint, the linchpin is what was your client's status at that time?
Absolutely. I don't think I have to hang my hat on other than...
And to be fair, that's where my question about supersedious was not frivolous. Even though I recognize inequity, supersedious is discretionary, not mandatory, but without supersedious, isn't the order that was entered 5 days before in effect? I know the appeal time hasn't run, but unless you succeed in getting it reversed, wasn't it effective back to that date?
In effect, yes. Is it final? I would say no.
Well, but that's two different questions.
That is two different questions. And how you decide the other one may have an impact on this one.
All right.
All right. Anything further on that?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Baird, good morning again.
In my mind, the threshold question in this case is really whether Margaret Wild has standing to appear at all in the region. Object or demand or file at the time of the January 24th hearing when the court interviewed granting request for the minor child, the rights of Margaret Wild had been entered by Judge Carter.
So you like my supersedious argument a lot.
I do. I do. I think you get
you probably like it better now than you liked it 15 yes. minutes ago. Yes.
I think, however, you get to the same result even if you were to give Margaret the benefit of some ongoing status up to the point in time of the January hearing. And the reason I say that is that the statute is very specific in that it requires notice only to a non-custodial. I think that language...
Certified mail.
Certified. And publication, which the publication clearly occurs. But the language of the statute is unambiguous as it relates to the non-custodial. It does not include other persons, other interested parties. The legislature very clearly could have added that language had it felt that that was appropriate.
For purposes of this argument, are you assuming that Peggy's status under the Texas order could be considered up to the date of the hearing on this name change?
Only arguendo. You know, my okay. position is her rights were terminated by the prior order. But even if you give her the benefit of some ongoing status up to the point of the January 24th name change, she still doesn't fit the requirement of the statutory notice because she's not a...
Doesn't that take us back to what is the standing under the Texas order? What would Texas, wouldn't Texas law, assuming we get past the lack of superseding the five-day earlier order, wouldn't Texas law control then as to what that, what her status was?
I don't think so under my read of Quintella, which is cited in my other brief. I think when you have those issues, you assume that Texas law is the same. In Nebraska law, very clearly, Nebraska would be the situs of the name change. Nebraska would be the situs of the statutory determination of what's required. So I think Nebraska law controls this note. I don't think the interpretation...
And you're talking about in local parentis status.
The definition of parent under the name change statute.
Okay.
So if we had a situation where there was someone in loco parentis status, undisputed, it's your position that name change notice would not be required to that person?
Same with a conservator? Same with a guardian?
Yes. Because the statute simply does not provide for notice to other interested parties. And I think very clearly, particularly in the realm of in loco parentis, the case law says, look, this is not elevating that party, the holder of that status, to the functional equivalent of a parent. So if she has any standing remaining on January 24th when the name change is granted, she still doesn't get notice under the statute. That language is unambiguous. It is not the province of the court to read into that. Well, we also deem that conservators get notice, or guardians get notice, or sharing in loco parentis status get notice.
So what happens in the cases? Who shows up at the name change hearing?
In this particular case?
No, in our reported cases.
I think generally the petitioner and sometimes the child.
So we have jurisprudence where, say, husband wants to change his name, and mom and kids show up and have a say-so at the hearing. How'd they get there?
Well, but that's a parent, right? In that circumstance, that's a non-custodial.
But not a parent of the person whose name is sought to be changed.
So we have
various cases, and we've all talked about the factors that go into best interest of changing names and so forth. But we do have at least one case that I have seen where husband comes in, a man comes in and wants to change his name. And present at the hearing are his wife, also the mother of the children, and they show up, and I don't know how they all got there. How did they all get there? Why are they there? Are they required to be there under a statute?
No. And I guess that, you know, some of these, sometimes law is generated upon what happened in the lower court. So apparently in that situation, the lower court allowed some objection to be heard. I don't think that means...
And what's the custom with respect to publication notice? Doesn't it usually say this is on the docket and... anybody can show up, or you're invited to show up, here's the hearing. It doesn't specify your relationship to the individual who seeks his or her name to be changed. That's the vocabulary of the publication.
And I think it would be up to the lower court to determine whether or not the objector hearing has any standing to object, or whether they would allow the objector to be.
So ultimately what happened to the appellant here in terms of her objections to the name change of the child?
She did not appear at the name change hearing, but she subsequently filed a motion to vacate. I think voices those same concerns in the hearing. The court overruled the motion to vacate. That was the order that has been timely appealed here. So I think the only order that this court can examine on appeal is the district court's denial of the motion to vacate, not whether or not the name change was properly permitted, because the appeal time on that was not stayed by vacate.
Was standing challenged below, and does it matter?
I believe standing was challenged in the court below by virtue of objection to Peggy's motion to vacate and her assertion that she should have received notice. So I don't think anyone said, look, there's not standing, but I think what was said is she's not entitled to notice. I think that also.
Ms. Barrett, you said that they're out of time as to the first order, but that wouldn't be true if the requirement for notice was jurisdictional, because that order could be attacked at any time in any proceeding, and consequently in the appeal from the motion to vacate, it could attack the order for lack of subject matter jurisdiction if the requirement was jurisdictional. I'm assuming... Well, do you disagree with any of that? And I'm assuming that you do not and would take the position it's not jurisdictional.
Right.
All right.
And I don't think jurisdiction was raised ever.
But the court has an obligation to consider it regardless.
Can't waive subject matter jurisdiction. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute
and 5 seconds, Mr. Likens.
I think you've probably heard enough from us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes arguments for the day. Court is adjourned, and you are excused.